While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask what's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to On The Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and today is Thursday, the 23rd of April, 2026. If the early part of the week is about momentum, Thursday is where performance becomes visible across the country, from Swakopmund to Rundu, Ochuarongo to Rudret, Katimamulilo to Khobabas. The pace of the week is now revealing its results. What began as intention is now taking shape in outcomes, in decisions, and in the first real indicators of progress. Today, we turn our attention to delivery and follow through. How are institutions holding up under sustained pressure beyond the announcement and commitments? Are we seeing consistent execution where it matters most, in communities, in businesses, and in the everyday experiences of Namibians? We continue tracking Namibia's evolving economic trajectory with particular focus on green industrialization, investment momentum, and the country's positioning in an increasingly competitive global environment. As the week progresses, so does the agency. Because in today's economy, timing is not just important, it is decisive. Young Namibians remain central to this story. The role is no longer on the horizon. It is active, immediate, and influential. From entrepreneurship to digital innovation, there shaping outcomes in real time. The key question now is whether the systems around them are keeping pace with their drive and ambition. We also stay focused on governance in action, not just what is being promised, but what is being delivered. As policy moves from planning into implementation, the phrases shift to accountability, efficiency, and tangible results. Where progress is evident, we'll spotlight it. Where challenges persist, we'll interrogate it. And as always, we remain grounded in lived reality, where national strategy meets daily life. Because ultimately, the success of any plan is measured not in statements, but it's an impact on the ground. Over the next 1 hour and 30 minutes, expect insight that shapes perspectives, analysis that adds clarity, and conversations that do matter. Because right here on the Reading News Analysis, we don't just follow the story, we track its impact. But for now, let's get right into those stories. The Namibia Statistics Agency, NSA, has officially concluded the data collection phase of the 2025-2026 Namibia Household Income and Expenditure Survey, marking the end of a 12-month nationwide operation that ran until 22nd April 2026. Now, the survey covered 11,016 households across 14 regions, providing a comprehensive snapshot of income, spending patterns, and living conditions. Conducted over a full year, the exercise was designed to capture seasonal variations in household consumption. Now, as Namibia's primary source of data on income and expenditure, the NSA expenditure statistics plays a critical role in measuring poverty and inequality, informing economic policy, and supporting key indicators such as inflation and the Consumer Price Index, also known as CPI. The data will also contribute to national accounts and broader development planning. The operation involved 153 field staff, supported by additional trained reserves, and utilized digital data collection through computer-assisted personal interviewing, improving efficiency, monitoring, and data security. The survey represents a major national investment, with total costs amounting to approximately 129.4 million Namibian dollars. Funding covered field operations, staff remuneration, vehicles, IT systems, and other logistical requirements, with fieldwork now complete, the NSA says it has moved into data processing and analyzing phase. The final report is expected to be released by March 2027, according to NSA, after which findings will be shared through official publications and shareholder engagement. The NSA has assured participants that all collected information will remain confidential and used strictly for statistical purposes in line with national legislation.
The Namibia Statistics Agency has concluded with the data collection phase of the 2025-2026 Namibia Household Income and Expenditure Survey after 12 months of fieldwork across all 14 regions. The survey covered more than 11,000 households and is a key source of data used to measure poverty, inequality, living conditions, inflation, and economic trends that is in Namibia. The public is advised to know that households should no longer expect visits from field staff, as the project now moves in data processing, validation, and analysis. The final Namibia Household Income and Expenditure Survey report is expected to be released by the end of March 2027. The Namibia Statistics Agency would like to thank all participating households, stakeholders, traditional leaders, the media, and the government for supporting the successful completion of the nationwide survey.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Ngelo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo deto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi. Dayo loka, opone ushendi fenawa, nukumona oijamo ili nawa, ninge kwa tafano na Monica ko Eagle FM, onore tatu imwe bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali, ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, oma filane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, now let's continue with other news. The acting executive director in the Ministry of International Relations and Trade, Asar Nashikaku, has announced that the second Namibia EU Business Forum will take place from the 12th to the 13th of May 2026, as Namibia continues to strengthen its economic ties with the European Union. Speaking ahead of the event at the Government Information Sharing Center, Nashikaku said this year's forum will be held under the theme Towards Stronger, Greener and More Diversified Economies, catalyzing business and trade opportunities between the EU and Namibia. And quite an interesting theme, considering that yesterday we covered green industrialization, its impact and the finances that comes with it. Now, the gathering is expected to serve as a key platform for dialogue between policymakers and the private sector, with a particular emphasis on unlocking investment in sustainable industries. Now, the forum forms part of Namibia's broader strategy to position itself as a regional hub for green industrialization, leveraging its abundant renewable energy resources and growing interest from European investors. And again, I think we can't overemphasize the example of solar energy as a form of one of the renewable energies that Namibia really needs to tap and expand into households, even in urban areas, such as, for instance, in the capital city of Namibia, where households in at the township level are using solar so that we can diversify our energy resources, where we are getting from those perhaps who are relying on the grid, and then there are those who are relying on solar. Now, recent developments such as large-scale green hydrogen projects and renewable energy partnerships have underscored Namibia's ambition to transition towards a low-carbon economy while creating jobs. Anna Beatrice Martens, ambassador of the European Union to Namibia, noted that this year's forum will focus on high-potential sectors. But for now, let's take a listen to Mr. Asar Nashikaku.
So the Ministry of International Relations and Trade is therefore happy to announce that Namibia will host the second Namibia EU Business Forum, scheduled to take place from 12 to 13 May 2026 in Windhoek, Namibia. This business forum will build on the inaugural business forum, which was held in Brussels in 2023. This year's forum will be held under the theme Towards Stronger, Greener, and More Diversified Economies, Catalyzing Business and Trade Opportunity Between the EU and Namibia. This business forum will mark an important milestone in the deepening of Namibia's strategic partnership with the European Union, moving towards a concrete cooperation in trade and investment, as well as industrial development. It will also reflect our shared commitment to advancing green industrialization, strengthening resilient value chains, promoting sustainable and inclusive economic growth. Moreover, it will also serve as a high-level platform to consolidate our diplomatic relations, strengthen trade under the SADC EU Economic Partnership Agreement, and unlock new avenues for investment and private sector collaboration, particularly through the development of regional and global value chains. Ladies and gentlemen, the business forum is expected to bring together approximately 400 high-level participants, including government representatives, private sector leaders, investors, development finance institutions, and policymakers from both Namibia and the European Union. It will also provide for the public to follow the proceedings across digital platforms. This year, the Business Forum will focus on five strategic sectors, such as green hydrogen and renewable energy, critical raw materials, agribusiness, cultural and creative industries, and automotive industry. Now, these sectors is aligned well with Namibia national development priorities under the National Development Plan 6 and are critical for driving economic transformation, value addition, and employment creation. In particular, Namibia partnership with the European Union is in green hydrogen stand at the forefront of this transformation, positioning Namibia as a future hub for green energy. In this context, strategic infrastructure such as the ports of Walvis Bay and Luderitz are poised to play a pivotal role as emerging logistics and industrial hubs. These ports offer Namibia a unique opportunity to enhance trade facilitation, support the development of regional and global value chains, and position the country as a gateway for trade and investment into the Southern African region. The Business Forum will also feature cross-cutting areas, such as skill developments, where masterclasses and seminars will be offered to strengthen private sector capacity. This specific master plan session will be held on 11 May 2026, and it will cover rules of origin and cumulation as applied under the SADC EU EPA, the European Union as a regulatory frameworks, including what we call the CBAM, and the UDR regulations, opportunity-driven skills and vocational education, and training focus on opportunity-driven approach, investment opportunities under the EU Global Gateway Initiative. Another key highlight of the business forum really will be a presentation of 30 bankable Namibian projects to potential investors aimed at bringing or bridging the gap between opportunity and investment. Apart from the dialogue, this business forum will also be action-orientated, aimed at catalyzing partnership, unlocking financings, and accelerating investment. We therefore encourage investors, business leaders, and relevant stakeholders from both Namibia and the European Union to participate in this important platform and to tap into these particular opportunities. Lastly, let me inform the media that this particular forum as well, the Vice President of Namibia, Her Excellency Lucia Vetboy, will attend this event, accompanied by the ministers and senior officials. And Namibia will warmly welcome the participation of the EU Commissioner and her delegation at this particular business forum. Now, this high-level engagement reflects the strength of our bilateral relations and underscores the European Union's commitment in supporting the Namibia's development trajectory. With this, I thank you so much.
Meanwhile, Anna Beatrice Martens, Ambassador of the European Union to Namibia, noted that this year's forum will focus on high potential sectors, including agriculture, automotive manufacturing, and the creative industries. The sectors, she said, are critical for building a more resilient and diversified economy capable of generating quality employment. That brings us to such engagement. Now, such engagements like this in Namibia, like the Namibia EU Business Forum, are less about speeches and more about access. That is access to capital, to markets, to technology, and to influence, which is what a lot of business people are looking into or looking forward now. For a relatively small economy like Namibia, these platforms are quietly shape entire industries if they are used strategically. If, for instance, business people are made able to access them and be able to play their part and to get ideas and to get also funding for their businesses. Now, the upcoming forum builds on the momentum of the inaugural Namibia EU Business Forum, which facilitated investment discussions and partnerships in areas such as renewable energy and infrastructure development. Previous EU-banked initiatives in Namibia have included support for sustainable agriculture value chains, vocational training programs, and financing mechanisms through institutions like the European Investment Bank, which has helped local enterprises scale and integrate into global markets. Now, trade relations between Namibia and the European Union are already anchored in frameworks such as the Economic Partnership Agreement, which provides preferential access for Namibian exports, including beef, fish and grapes, into European markets. Now, the new forum is expected to expand on those foundations by encouraging value addition within Namibia rather than relying primarily on raw export. Organizers also anticipate the participation of approximately 400 high-level delegates, including government officials, development finance institutions, and the private investors from both Namibia and Europe. Discussions are expected to translate into concrete business deals, joint ventures, and policy commitments aimed accelerating sustainable economic growth as global demand rises for green products and ethically sourced goods. Namibia is increasingly positioning itself as a strategic partner for Europe, making forums such as this a critical bridge between policy ambition and real economic opportunity. Now, with that being said, let's take a listen to Anna Beatrice Martens.
Zoom into one or the other aspect of our relations and looking back at 4 years ago when late President Geingob signed a strategic partnership with the EU together with the Commissioner President of the European Commission, Mrs. von der Leyen. So this is a strategic partnership that was established on green hydrogen and critical raw material value chains that has fundamentally transformed our relations by increasing the level of economic engagement that we have seen since then. The next step to establishing the strategic partnership was to agree on a roadmap the year later. And in fact, Her Excellency President Daitwa visited at the time as Foreign Minister Brussels in 23 to endorse together with late President the roadmap. The roadmap for the strategic partnership, we'll be talking about that at the business forum. And the roadmap essentially is a concrete blueprint of how we want to fill this strategic partnership with substance and actions and investments. This roadmap was in fact announced at the first EU Namibia Business Forum. It was already a success at that time. We had 200 participants physically taking part and over 2,000 streamed. On the session, we hope to reach an even bigger participation in person. And we had 21 countries and over 130 companies attending. So this was the first step. We hope to go beyond that in the second business forum in May. Since then, since 22, we've really worked tirelessly as partners between EU and Namibia, the officials as well as the private sector, to foster investor confidence, to raise visibility of Namibia's investment opportunities and to create momentum for renewable hydrogen, renewable energy, the green industrialization, which is now enshrined in the NDP6. To also work on sustainable raw material value chains while backing these two sectors with resources and political will, and trigger the domino effect of networking relationships and private sector partnerships. So, from our side, we have been able as Team Europe, so as Europe together with member states, to mobilize grants and loans in the order of 1.2 billion euros for this commitment. And there are around 20 billion euros in the pipeline from the private sector to be invested as these new industries.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no! Why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the Mimo with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life you just get squeezed. But luckily with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
As these new industrial sectors are evolving, so this is a partnership that we have. The investments on our side are taking place under the hat of the European Global Gateway. And through targeted investments, we also contribute to Vibersbane Luderitz being transformed into logistics hubs, as you were rightly highlighting. So the business forum in May will be a step forward in this, and we are delighted that the Vice President, Her Excellency Witbooi, will open the event together with our Commissioner Rothfire for environment and water and economic issues, circular economy. So we not only live up to our promise from 23 to hold the second edition of the Namibia EU Business Forum. Moreover, we show that EU and Namibia are walking a path towards green industrialization and critical raw material value chains together as partners. And Namibia can count on the European Union to support the land of the brave in fostering European growth, inclusiveness and resilience for sustainable development, as outlined also in the 6th National Development Plan. As the European Union, we are convinced that our political willingness combined with European investments will positively contribute to diversifying the Namibian economy and beneficiate natural resources development in the country and to empower the youth. It was you already anticipated the sectors that we will be covering in the Business Forum. We are delighted to have the presence of our commissioner attending the Business Forum, which will have a broader scope than the first one, a commissioner for Roswell for Environment, Water Resilience and Competitive Circular Economy has been championing the EU single market for waste, sustainable products and our European zero pollution. The presence of our commissioner for environment demonstrates once again the highest possible level of political will to strengthen this partnership going forward. The two sectors at the heart of the EU-Namibia partnership, namely renewable energy as well as sustainable raw material value chains, will feature prominently at the EU Business Forum. And as was already mentioned, we decided to broaden the scope of the second business forum to include the agriculture sector, car manufacturing and creative industries in order to reflect also the priorities, strong priorities of the government, MDP6, as well as these sectors being ones that have a potential of generating jobs. And that's really what this partnership between EU and Namibia is about, is generating quality jobs in a diversified and resilient economy. There are benefits, opportunities in these sectors, in the agribusiness and the automotive parts as well, where we see a strong potential for green industrialization as well, so links between the automotive sector and the partnership on green industrialization. And, of course, cultural and creative sectors with an angle on cinematography. We all know the legacy of Mad Max 10,000 BC and the Flight of Phoenix, which made the sceneries of Namibia worldwide known. And that's also one of the objectives of the Business Forum, to promote and project the opportunities of Namibia and the creative industries sector. Going a step further on our, this must be also seen in the context of our engagement with Namibia generally on trade, the EU being Namibia's biggest export market and most diverse market. So by attracting European investors to these five sectors, we hope to further boost trade relations and investment opportunities here in Namibia. We invite the private companies, investors, financing institutions, both from the European Union and Namibia, to join us on the 11th to 13th of May in the Windhoek Country Club. There will be a mix of master classes, high-level plenaries, thematic discussions, and investment opportunity presentations. Indeed, which will give a very hands-on and very B2B feature to this event. So don't miss the opportunity. Register for our business forum to connect and exchange and seek new opportunities in partnership in trading and creating.
Okay. And then we had it from Anna Beatrice Martens, that is ambassador of the European Union to Namibia. At national level, the importance of such engagements lies in deepening ties with a major economic bloc like the European Union. The EU is not just a trading partner. It is a source of long-term financing, regulatory standards, and technical experts. Now, through frameworks such as the Economic Partnership Agreement, Namibia already enjoys preferential access to European markets. Forums like this help move the relationship beyond raw exports toward value-added production, which is what Namibia has been emphasizing on recent talks. Now, processing minerals locally, branding agricultural goods, or developing manufacturing capacity. For Namibian businesses, the potential benefits are practical and immediate if they engage actively and if the reciprocation, of course, is also Now, European Development Finance Institute. Okay, pardon me on that. Like I was saying, for Namibian businesses, the potential benefits are practical and immediate if the engagement are active. Now, oh my goodness. Okay, please pardon me. Some of those benefits are access to finance and investors. European development finance institutions and private investors often attend thus forums looking for viable projects. This is especially relevant for sectors like renewable energy, agri-processing and infrastructure. A well-prepared Namibian company can secure funding, partnerships, or even equity investment opportunities that are difficult generally to access locally. Now, as we also engaged spokesperson for Green Hydrogen yesterday, that is Jonah Musheko, on how companies, for instance, tend to be doing their very best in opening up their eyes in sectors of green industrialization. And then we have entry into global value chains, a relationship that's already there between Namibia and the European Union. I mean, Namibian firms operate in isolation or within regional markets. Engagements with the EU companies can plug them into international supply chains. For example, agricultural producers can move from exporting raw crops to supplying certified processed goods to European retailers where margins are significantly higher. Technology and skills transfer partnerships formed at such forums often come with technical expertise. I mean, in sectors like green hydrogen, climate smart agriculture, or automotive components, European firms bring advanced technologies and operational standards, and local businesses benefit not just from the deal, but from the knowledge embedded in it. And then there's the understanding of regulatory standards. The EU has some of the strictest environmental and quality regulations in the world. Direct engagements help Namibians or Namibian businesses to understand those requirements, whether it's carbon footprint, tracking, sustainability certification, or product safety standards. Meeting the standards can unlock premium markets. And also, when a company, for instance, is going to be engaging with the EU, there are certain requirements that they need to meet, certain requirements for their products or for their produce that they need to meet. So when they actually go out and meet this certain requirements and try to meet the certain requirements, they're also able to access other markets, not just the European Union, but other markets as well, using those standards that they have made their products or their produce to go by. And then there's the expansion into new sectors. The inclusion of industries like creative arts and automated manufacturing signals diversification. For instance, Namibia's creative sector, the film, the fashion, and digital arts can access European audiences and funding platforms. And especially with the EU, who tends to be also interested in firms. Similarly, early positioning in automated value chains, even at component level, could open new industrial pathways. Now, policy influence and visibility forums bring together government and private sector voices. Businesses that participate can influence policy direction, highlighting bottlenecks such as logistics, energy costs, or export barriers. At the same time, they raise their profile among international stakeholders. That's it, there's a catch. These opportunities don't automatically translate into results. Businesses that benefit tend to be those that arrive prepared with clear proposal, financial records, and an understanding of what they actually want. And without that, the forum becomes more of a networking exercise than a growth catalyst. In short, for Namibia, such engagements are a bridge from potential to execution. For local businesses, they are a chance to move from being smaller players in a domestic market to participants in a much larger global economy, provided they treat the opportunity as a deal-making environment, not just a conference. And with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutete okoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitida mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetida oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uto otukwetida o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fada fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko berewa bura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite okoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi kayo loka opone ujendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa.
Meanwhile, Thursday, Wednesday's The Villager e-paper is out and available. Expect the following headlines. We look urbaners hail e-learning, saying it's convenient and efficient. IMF calls for sub-Saharan oil importers to protect the vulnerable. Bank Windhoek digital innovation advances to WhatsApp banking. Namibia's African Peer Review Council appointed. RFA to invest $2 million Namibian dollars annually in road sector research. RMB, Bank of Namibia, uniting industry efforts for a greener, more effective, inclusive future. Grab your copy and read up on the following, on this headlines and more. All you have to do is send a text message. That's a WhatsApp text message to 081-200-4144. Also be on the outlook for tomorrow's The Villager e-paper on Friday.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now let's look at economic indicators for today. $1 dollar today is equals to 16.57 Namibian dollars. One Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars point 84 cents. One United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars point 51 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars point 37 cents. One Chinese yuan is equals to 2 Namibian dollars point 43 cents. One Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar point 21 cents. And with that being said, let's now switch over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. Today we start off concerning the Zambian government executes order over Mulungu remains.
Thanks so much, V. And let's get to the story. Now, the Zambian government has executed the August 2025 Gauteng High Court in Pretoria's judgment that entitles the government to repatriate the remains of former Zambian President Edgar Lungu for the purposes of a state funeral and burial. Now, let's speak to SABC News specialist correspondent Sophie Mukwena. Sophie, let's begin with this, get a bit of sort of understanding and also Durko's response to this.
Well, you indicated that the body or the remains of former President Edgar Lungu were removed from the private burial service Two Mountains, where it was kept for a long time. And it was taken because there was another challenge in the Supreme Court, and the parties were supposed to have gone back to the Supreme Court. But it looks like there was no movement from the side of the Lungu family. And therefore, that is regarded as a process that didn't continue. And it is for that reason the Zambian government then implemented the court order of last year that granted them a leeway to take the body back to Zambia for burial and for that state funeral. But again, late yesterday, upon discovery, the family went to the High Court in Pretoria, where they presented this matter again, seeking an interdict. And of course, they were granted an order where it was ordered that the body be removed where it is at the South African government mortuary to the private home where it was kept while there were legal processes. Now, the South African government will be compelled to release the body or to take the body back to this private burial service, because failure to do that, it will be in violation of the laws of the country. They will be in contempt of court. But we understand that today they will file papers both sides, and later this matter will be heard, and the deadline is 21st of May. But the reality is, yes, the body was taken to the government mortuary, but it is going to be taken back as per the directive of the court to this private burial service, Two Mountains, where it was kept for some time now.
We'll leave it there, Sophie. Thanks, thanks for that. SABC News Specialist Correspondent Sophie Mokoena.
Meanwhile, the South African government is set to be working on providing affordable electricity to South Africans.
Since the start of April, Eskom Direct customers have been hit with an 8.76% electricity tariff increase. Municipal customers are next, with a hike of just over 9% set to take effect in July. Another increase of 8.83% has already been approved for April 2027, and Electricity Minister Hosien Tsora Mokgopa says this is unsustainable.
The light might be on or available, but it doesn't mean that everyone can afford. So that's the next piece of the puzzle that we want to resolve. I've gone out public to say that they were finished our internal paper that we are taking to cabinet in relation to how we address the price of electricity. There's a category of users that we are identifying, the consumers rather. So the first is your energy intensive users.
This comes as Eskom enters the 2026 winter season from 1st April to 31st August with continued energy stability. CEO Dan Marogane presented an outlook saying with temperatures starting to dip, no load shedding is anticipated this winter.
We sit here at a much more improved position from an energy availability factor compared to this period 3 years ago when we started this journey. We are sitting at 65 at the end of the financial year. We are focused on sustaining reliable generation performance, and the team in generation is deepening our priorities for maintenance and improving reliability.
The minister says load reduction remains a cause for concern, with efforts underway to ensure provinces are assisted out of this cycle.
7 of the 9 provinces will not have load reduction by October of this year. Already there's no load reduction in the Western Cape and the Northern Cape. The only 2 provinces that are likely going to be carried into the next calendar year, it's Gauteng and also KZN. Why is that the case? First is the density, the magnitude of the amount of feeders that are affected. So these are the feeders that ultimately give us electricity.
The power utility has come up with strategies on tackling corruption while also welcoming efforts made by the SIU in this regard. The special investigating unit has secured a court order to freeze tens of millions of rands in luxury assets linked to a multi-million rand Eskom procurement scam, where Eskom officials allegedly manipulated purchase orders for electrical relays, critical equipment used to keep the grid stable.
There are 2 other strategies that have not been mentioned. The one is to move over to electronic purchasing and to automate the systems. and the other is proactive assurance during the purchasing, not post-purchasing, to try and improve the anticipation of problems. Those are still being implemented. The proactive auditing has started. The digital buying is still in process of being developed.
The CEO of the National Transmission Company South Africa says, although the SA wholesale electricity market could not be launched in April, they remain on course to launch in the third quarter of the year.
It's anticipated that the new electricity price determination policy will become law in the country soon, with a public urge to in the coming months be on the lookout for a public participation process. The electricity minister says at the end, these efforts should help in addressing the high prices of electricity. I'm Katlego Lorodi for SABC News in Sunning Hill, Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, Capitec said to deliver has delivered a robust financial result.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying with us. In a difficult economic climate marked by pressure on households and businesses, Capitec has delivered robust financial results. While continuing to expand its reach across South Africa's banking landscape, the digital bank now serves more than half of the adult population. Earlier, I spoke to Graham Lee, who's the group CEO of Capitec, to unpack the numbers and what they mean for consumers and the broader economy. Right, let's take you here where we take a look at in a difficult economic climate marked by pressure on households and businesses, Capitec has delivered robust financial results while continuing to expand its reach across South Africa's banking landscape. The digital bank now serves more than half of the adult population. Joining us to expand the conversation is Graham Lee, Capitec.
Care that goes where you go. That's international travel insurance through NHP. We facilitate cover of up to 10 million Namibian dollars per member for medical emergencies abroad as part of your membership. No extra charge. To receive your policy within minutes, simply register at nhp.com.na before you travel. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
What they essentially mean for consumers and the broader economy. A very good afternoon to you. Thank you so much for your time. As we take stock of these phenomenal results, Capitec marks 25 years with headline earnings up 23% to 16.8 billion rand and 26 million active clients. I mean, that is incredible. What explains your growth despite what we're facing at the moment? There's a lot of economic pressure on many households across the country.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for the opportunity to connect with your viewers. Our focus in the last 25 years hasn't changed. What has remained true is that we stayed consistent with the principles upon which we founded the business, the most important of which is that focus on clients and putting the client first. Our business model is also one which is designed to share back our successes with our clients. And you see that in this year's results in the 1 billion rand that's been given back to clients through savings on fees, cash back, and various different rewards, most importantly, data rewards.
Cape Town, one of Africa's
most... What you're essentially saying is that growth reflects clients choosing Capitec to play a bigger role in their financial lives. As we take a look at some of the trends of
late,
what are you seeing in real consumer spending behavior right now? Because, our customers, for one, consolidating finances because money is tighter.
Certainly. And there have been recent pressures, shocks coming from global events, which are going to impact, looking forward, on prices on some key goods such as oil. Consumers and businesses will remain under pressure this year. And what we see in their finances is that clients continue to look for ways to manage their money better and continue to seek for value.
So with oil price volatility back in focus globally and all the ripple effects from the Middle East tensions playing out, fuel costs are filtering into transport, food and inflation. From Capitec's data across 26 million clients, Mr. Lee, are you at all seeing the higher energy costs showing up in banking behavior at all?
We are just at the beginning of starting to see some of the impact of those costs. It has been muted so far, but we do expect that they will continue to have momentum as the situation in the world remains.
You're targeting SMMEs quite aggressively. I mean, just looking at your numbers, your business banking clients grew 71%. What do you equate this to? Is it evidence of entrepreneurial growth, or is it economic survival as formal employment struggles at the moment?
What we attribute it is our very simple offering of better service, faster credit decisions, and more affordable banking, which is attracting both established businesses as well as bringing small businesses into the business banking ecosystem for the first time. People look at their hustle and start to manage it more like a traditional business.
And in terms of using scale to enhance client value, how are you achieving that? And, in terms of the response that you're also getting and the growth that you're seeing, it's been on an upward trajectory.
Scale creates two virtuous cycles. One, from that scale, we get economies of scale, mm-hmm. and we share some of those economies back with our clients, hence the 1 billion rand and givebacks. The other virtuous cycle it creates is one of data. It enables us to understand our clients better, to be able to serve them better, and particularly with respect to credit, make better, faster credit decisions. We are able to say yes to more clients, not because we are lowering the bar, but because we know them better.
And, as you and I speak this afternoon, there is a lot going on insofar as the politics of the country are concerned. The findings that are emerging from the Madlanga Commission of Inquiry process, concerns have been raised there about weaknesses when it comes to South Africa's financial system that were also highlighted. You would know this, of course, by the Financial Action Task Force. From your perspective, I mean, has the banking sector sufficiently closed those anti-money laundering gaps, or do you believe that there's still a lot more work to be done as we watch commissions like Madlanga following the money trail in efforts to curb corruption?
A lot of good work has been done in the past few years, and a lot of progress is made. What you can see is excellent cooperation between all of the relevant arms of the public sector, as well as all of the banks, to work together to ensure that we clamp down on all forms of money laundering and crime.
Mm. Do you ultimately think that banks can realistically stop laundering, always evolving faster than regulation? I also know that Capitec has done quite a lot when it comes to measures put in place to curbing acts like cybercrime and cybersecurity.
Absolutely. We work for the good of our clients, and that means protecting them against all forms of crime, digital and otherwise. If you look at what we've accomplished in the last year, the innovations that we've put in place have prevented 673 million rands in money not being stolen from our clients' accounts because of that technical intervention. So we do a lot of work with our regulators to protect the entire system. We do even more work focused on our client, making sure that they have the best experience possible and that they have the most secure experience possible.
Tourism leaders say to gather in Cape Town in order to map Africa's travel future.
Cape Town, one of Africa's most visited cities, and this week it became the continent's most important room for the future of travel.
World Travel Markets Africa has drawn global industry leaders to Cape Town, all trying to answer the same question. Where does tourism go from here?
The roadmap is digital. AI is no longer a luxury. It's the new engine driving how the world plans and experiences travel.
I think Africa is really present, and I think the growth is palpable at the moment. We have a huge young generation, and they're very savvy. They're very technology minded. So what we're seeing is a lot of sort of trends, obviously AI and tech when it comes to bookings.
Because the global travel map is being redrawn, conflict in the Middle East is disrupting key flight corridors, pushing up fares and making traditional European markets more expensive to reach. For a continent that has long competed on value, that shift hits hard. That disruption could also open a window for Africa.
I think tourism in Africa is sitting at the precipice of actually benefiting from this crisis, believe it or not. And I don't mean to be opportunistic, but we are in a place where we can benefit from the fact that we have existing relationships. We've got growing trade routes, a lot to do with increased air access. We've got now almost 200 flights a week that come directly into Cape Town, with our intention to grow direct flights into China and India as the next target.
And one market in particular stands out, China. Initiatives like China Ready are helping the continent adapt to attract Chinese visitors.
China is the world's largest source market for outbound travel. Before COVID, we recorded 155 million Chinese outbound. And this year in 2026, we are projected 165 million Chinese outbound. African is an under-penetrated market for them to the China market. They love the destination, you know. But the thing is, how we get them from point A to point B? How can we make visa facilitation easier for the Chinese? This is point number one. Point number two is flight and connectivity. Currently, there's still no direct flight.
East Africa is already leading the change. Tanzania and Zanzibar have positioned themselves specifically for the ever-growing Chinese market.
And when you are the larger economy like China, with more than 1.4 billion people, and with more than 156 million travelers from China to some countries, we developed a campaign called Amazing Tanzania, specifically for Chinese markets. We simplified our visa processing. So to date, as we speak, a Chinese traveler can get visa online or visa on arrival in Tanzania with very seamless process. Air Tanzania flies to Gwanju 3 times a week, and by end of this month, they will add 2 more days. In the next few months, we wanted to launch in other markets. So we will be going to Shanghai.
The deal signed here in Cape Town this week may not grab headlines, but the conversation here on routes, source markets and where the next wave of travelers will come from could help shape African tourism for the next decade. Julie Shara, CGTN, Cape Town.
Moving on with other news, a blind artisan in Cote d'Ivoire rebuilds his life through weaving.
In Douchy Town, south of Cote d'Ivoire, Sebastian Yao Kwame is well known as a master weaver. He uses plastic strips to make furniture, ranging from beds, tables and chairs. He has gained his prowess in just a few years after losing his sight, but his life is now on an upward trajectory.
This trade has changed a lot of things in my life and within my family. Others thought that because I'd lost my sight, I'd sit outside mosques begging or asking anyone for money. But today, thanks to this trade, I'm truly supporting myself. I'm able to feed my little family. I'm able to send my children to school.
He developed glaucoma, a condition that causes blindness, while still at secondary school in 2013. But that did not deter him from his dream of becoming a master weaver. He later decided to take up an artistry course of 5 years in the nearby town of Tesale. He then raised some capital to set up a workshop. His precision, meticulous arrangement of the threads hardly reflects the challenges of being blind. He regularly comes up with impressive items of varied colors and designs. Once in a while, he does require help from neighbors to get around the workshop.
We sometimes help him sort out and wind up the wires he uses in his work. Sebastian is genuinely brave. Sometimes there's no one in the courtyard and he gets up on his own, goes into the shower and washes himself. We don't know how he manages it, but he gets on well.
Sebastian has big dreams of expanding his business, increasing production, and eventually his income.
I am therefore appealing to the Ministry of Youth, Employment and Social Protection and the Ministry of Crafts to really come to my aid.
Among his clients are the Koulibaly family, who are still grateful for a piece they bought 4 years ago.
I chose the Pico bed myself. I chose the model and said that's what I want, and that's what he did with the colors and everything. When he finished and I went to see it, I was so happy.
Sebastian's prowess in weaving has proven to many that an inner vision can still become an outward reality, even where eyes no longer see. Wanjamungai, CGTN.
Discussions are ongoing on who will replace Antonio Guterres.
All right, let's go now to our correspondent, Shawn Bricepeace, who's in New York and has been watching that search for the UN's next Secretary General. Good evening to you, Shawn. This race for the next to succeed Antonio Guterres could not have come at a more pivotal time for the UN, could it? And I suppose, Sherwin, it's underscored by the tone that has been set by the first two candidates that have done this interactive dialogue. What tone has been set from the presentations done by the first two?
That the UN needs to again reassert itself and become the center of the universe, right? And, you know, when you talk about it coming at a pivotal time, you know, this election, just think about the United Nations creation after World War II. That was also regarded as a pivotal time. Think about the Cuban Missile Crisis in the 60s. That was also regarded as a critical time. The fight against apartheid, the decolonization of states, the augmentation of UN member states as a result of that was also a pivotal time. So the UN bureaucrats, Tula Sizwe, will often argue that it's always a pivotal time for the United Nations, and it's always having to circumvent and navigate all the forces that come with representing 193 UN member states. So yes, another pivotal time, and very much looking for a leader that can navigate the forces that are in opposition to each other, for example, in the UN Security Council, navigate the forces that have impugned the finances of the organization with member states, including the biggest contributors to the coffers of the United Nations, the United States, not paying their dues on times. In terms of geopolitics, peace and security, the other pillars of the United Nations, human rights deficits that are increasing around the world, and then, of course, the development agenda, the sustainable development goals, how to get that back on track. These are the issues that are at the core of this organization, and it is a leader that is being sought to navigate very, very choppy waters moving forward. Listen to Annalena Baerbock. She is presiding over this process. She's the current president of the General Assembly. She articulated what kind of leadership the United Nations needed in this moment, and this is how she framed it. Watch.
In a time of unprecedented financial and political pressure on the United Nations, strong and principled, effective leadership is essential to ensure that the Charter's promise of serving the people is kept, as the UN, through its agencies and programs, ensures everyday access for millions of people to clean drinking water, education for children, and even aviation safety for 1 billion passengers every year taking airplanes. Based on the revitalization resolution and joint letter with the President of the Security Council, the interactive dialogues are essential to ensuring a transparent and inclusive process. During the three-hour dialogues, candidates will have the chance to highlight their vision for the United Nations. By answering questions from 193 member states, they will also be given the opportunity to demonstrate their proven leadership abilities, experience and skills to lead a strong, fit-for-the-future organization, as well as their capacity to deliver across all three pillars of the United Nations of peace and security, sustainable development and human rights.
Tula Sizwe, some of the questions that have been presented to the candidates sound a bit like this. How is the next Secretary General going to restore trust and confidence in the UN Charter and international law, the rule of law? How will they use their position to advance Security Council reform? How to return the United Nations to the center of peacemaking without undermining the other pillars of human rights and development? How will they defend the UN's climate agenda, strengthen the role of the General Assembly, and push for implementation of the SDGs and the Pact of the Future that undergird where this organization will move in the future?
And the UN Security Council was always going to take center stage, wasn't it, Sherwin? Talk to me about what's coming out with regard to this issue of reform and getting the UN back to being, as you say, the center of peace brokering and peace maintenance around the world. Tell me about what the candidates have said about this theme of perhaps even changing the makeup of the 15-member UN Security Council.
Yeah, it's absolutely pivotal. In fact, Lasizwe, when you talk about the failures of the United Nations, the reference is often to the UN Security Council, some of the intractable issues that face this council and its inability to find them an off-ramp, right? Often peace negotiations are happening in locations around the world and not where it was actually created and set up for. The purview of the UN Security Council is the maintenance of peace and security around the world. And unfortunately, in recent decades, it simply has not lived up to that expectation. This is what Rebecca Greenspan, how she responded to a question about how she would use her position if she were to become the next Secretary General to push the reform process forward. Watch.
With respect to the reform of the Security Council, well, I also come from a region that feels underrepresented, so I understand very well the question. But I know that there are different groups within the member states that have different positions with respect to the reform of the Security Council. And you will have to look for a convergence and what is that you want to take forward. But I have said very clearly that a council, a Security Council that reflects the world of today will carry heavier and better weight.
And a clear recognition there from Rebecca Greenspan that it is not the purview of the Secretary General to push reform. It is the purview of UN member states. That's where the power brokers in this organization really lie, despite, you know, the SG being a figurehead. Rafael Grossi, the incumbent Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, who spoke yesterday, he says, "I don't see the Secretary General as having a magic wand to solve such a complex matter, but we must recognize the importance of it and hope to be working and having the conversation with everybody on this very topical issue. But the reform process is driven by member states. The Secretary General can play a facilitation role."
Sherwin, thank you for that absolute clarity as usual. But just very quickly, indulge me on this. Did I imagine it, or have we come, 2024 seems like a lifetime ago, right? Did I imagine that there was a point at which this whole issue of the reform of the UN Security Council had gained such momentum such that I seem to recall that there was a point where the U.S. in the Biden administration was supporting Africa having permanent representation, albeit without the veto. Did that happen or did I imagine it?
That certainly happened. Let me confirm it. You are not hallucinating. But such is the ebb and flow of some issues. You know, even to Lasizwe, the Sustainable Development Agenda, which was adopted in 2015, broad unanimity around this blueprint for a sustainable planet. And look how that is ebbing and flowing, despite the agreement that was fostered over 10 years ago. And of course, the deadline looming and implementation is at about, you know, 30%, 25%, whatever the number is. It's simply not going to meet that deadline. And so similarly, the Security Council reform, intergovernmental negotiations, intergovernmental member state negotiations that have been going on now for decades, have not even reached text-based negotiations where you can literally, you know, remove language and replace it by other language to really foster a consensus around what are the words on paper that we're going to vote for. That process has not evolved to text-based negotiations. So, you know, we can sit here and, you know, cross our fingers and cross our toes and hope into perpetuity, but this process is very slow moving, and what sort of catalyst the SG can play is probably going to be very minimal in moving that process forward in the near term.
All right, I just needed you to double check and affirm that I still have control of my faculties and I wasn't imagining all of it.
Meanwhile, Dangote Refinery begins marketable crude oil production.
The group says it has achieved its first oil from its upstream assets and is preparing to begin marketable crude production in the coming weeks. In an interview with Platts, part of SP Global Energy, Defokuma Edwin, the vice president of the group, said early testing has commenced on crude from its Niger Delta licenses. According to him, the company has already begun standard well testing and is preparing to scale up output. To unpack this, I'm joined by Dr. Nemeke Obiari, the oil and gas expert and consultant. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Dangote has begun crude production and is also seeking to establish its own shipping presence in a bid to reduce logistics costs and improve crude supply reliability. Talk to us. Is this one of the biggest stories for the year for you?
Yes, very exciting. It's an exciting news. You know, I've always advised that for us to maximize the opportunities and the huge potentials our downstream oil and gas sector, they're coming on stream on Dangote Refinery, that we make feedstocks available for him. And of course, I'm aware that he has some Martin fields and some OBLs that he got in partnership with NPC. I'm glad that they are started producing. I'm also advocating that for the national energy security, that the 445,000 barrels of crude that is meant for domestic refineries, probably so that are not working, should also be ceded to him under an agreed term that benefits every operator in that system. I said it clearly. We know the cost of production of the crude in Nigeria. What basically do is, okay, Aliko Dangote, you are taking, you know, a kind of a partnership between him, Dapman and Ipman. We are giving you some quantity of crude oil that is supposed to be for domestic refinery not working. We take it at this price, which is the cost of production, as also fixed margin all the operators in that downstream, the refiner who is refined, to the storage owners, then to retail station owners, such a way that it becomes energy feedstock for domestic consumption. It will help us to mitigate the volatile energy thing that we are seeing because of the war in the Middle East. It's a good, you know, I'm so proud of what he's doing and his long-term plan building up a conglomerate that gets about $100 billion revenue every year. So this is one of those added feathers. Kudos to Aliko. Just close your eyes and imagine if we were 20 other conglomerates like the Dangote group in the vast sectors of Nigeria, like the health sector, where we require about 110 trillion to fill gap and other sectors. Nigeria economy is one that can do up to $2.5 billion GDP within 10, 15 years if our acts together. Kudos to Aliko Dangote, kudos to Dangote group.
All right. Well, early indications suggest initial production could be relatively modest compared to the refinery's capacity. Does this material move the needle, and how does it compare to, you know, other companies within that segment?
Currently, based on the report, it's just about 4,500 barrels. Remember that the current plate capacity of the single refinery is about 6,000 barrels per day. And Alhaji Aliko is even planning to ramp it up to 1.4 million, which is very, very good. I've always made this argument. If Brazil, with good oil, have 15.5 billion barrels, have 19 refineries that can refine up to 4 million barrels of crude every day. Nigeria, with Dangote leading the space, and who are coming on stream and other modular refineries operating, can actually produce and refine nothing less than 3 million barrels of crude. We will have the sub-Saharan African market, 600 million man African market take over. Those coming from Rotterdam, from Asia, will have to elsewhere. So I think we need to put a holistic policy and program in place to encourage local operators across the sub-sectors in the downstream and upstream oil and gas sector. Nigeria is one country that can become, not just in the oil and gas sector, across every sector. The maritime sector can become the transshipment hub of Southern Africa, replacing Rotterdam. But we put in place the right private, public policy programs and policy in place to make sure that it becomes a win-win for the stakeholders, rather than cat and mouse game that we have seen over the last 4 years.
All right, I would like us to look at the broader impact of this for the refinery, Nigeria's upstream sector, and how significant this shift is in the context of Nigeria's oil value chain. I know you started talking in that trajectory, but I want us to draw a bit more on that.
Okay, good. You know, one of the first things we should do to make sure that we have a seamless fit is to ensure NNDPRA and the NUPRIC are truly independent and can operate without any inducement, any quotas. We need to ensure that NNPC becomes Petrobras or like the Emirates Oil or like the British Petroleum. And what do I mean by that? This idea that is owned 100% the federal government through the Federal Ministry of Finance Incorporated, Petroleum Ministry Incorporated, Canada Port. The Brazilians were in a position like us when they decided to divest 2% of the public hold, their public holdings in Petrobras, and handed over 72% of those shares to private sector investors, both domestic and foreign, and allowed the public sector space to own only 8%. And stayed it on the floor of the transaction. We can do the same thing. Let the federal government divest 70%, hand over 40% to domestic, deep-pocketed, technical, savvy people, and 30% to foreign investors willing to ramp up investment in this economy. Let the federal government own only 8%, just like they have 9% at the Nigerian Liquid Natural Gas. If we did, I will tell you, over the next 1-2 years, we'll be ramping up new investments of average of 30 to 30 to 50 billion annual into the sector. Nigeria is a gas economy. We have over $1.4 billion worth of gas reserve in Nigeria. We're not even tapping into that space. We need to deregulate the market, improve on gas tariffs to be very competitive. We can only use that production, not consumption. You know, open up this. Try and create a regulatory space that creates a force and shake between the refineries and the port owners and tonnage and truckers, the retail stations, and then take the whole of West Africa. I can tell you, we have a thing going for us to make sure this country becomes one of the biggest, top 10 biggest economy in the whole of the whole world, doing the right thing. We need to follow some of the actions that we have been put in public space over the last 15 to 20 years.
All right. Thank you so much. We need to go now, Mr. Naimeka Obiariri, oil and gas expert. Consultant, thank you for coming on the show today.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Loisa Shimena. And from Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again next time. Same place.